All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, November 11th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 52 degrees and misting here in upstate New York. Yes, that's what the official says. It is misting, and we will probably have some moisture here for the next couple days. At least it won't be in the form of snow. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show USDA Whistleblower, New Healthy GMO Tomatoes and Pigs. Yes. And what I couldn't fit into the description was nanotechnology as well. We looked at some extremely disturbing stories, as we do every day, but we say it with a smile and a laugh. Of things that they're putting into our food right now. We had this USDA whistleblower who came out and started speaking against some of the things that he was seeing happening with our food supplies. And of course, they found all kinds of little nickel and dime ways to turn him into a criminal. And they fired a bunch of his staff, and they went through all of their email servers. And really, it sounds like more of a witch hunt than anything. There are other USDA whistleblowers in that article we read yesterday out of Wired magazine. I think it was out of Wired. Hold on. We'll see. I don't know. I'll look while I'm talking. There were a number of other whistleblowers who weren't becoming public right now, but they were planning on it in the future, and they have at least given their statements to reporters. The new healthy GMOs, remember we read a couple days ago about how now GMO is a dirty word, and so the way they're going to start marketing this stuff to us resistant consumers, and that's the label that they put on us, was by just not mentioning GMOs anymore. And it appears to me through the stuff that we've been reading is now that they're going to turn around and sell it as nutraceuticals. Tell us how healthy it is for you, for your kids, for Nana, and how it's going to help us live healthier, more productive lives. And, you know, people are not bright enough to do the research. And so if the TV tells them that it's safe and healthy for them, they're going to eat it anyway. So I think we're going to continue down this vein a little bit, because there were a few more stories I never made it to yesterday. I've been battling for the last 40 minutes. I have now had three computers that were completely at 100% CPU usage with nothing going on, so I'm not sure what that was. Had to do some hard reboots here and try and get everything back together. But this one was out of Alternet, and I discovered this yesterday. It was from October 29th of 2015. We already knew this through a lot of our research that we've been digging into in the scientific journals, but it's interesting that a somewhat mainstream publication, and I mean, it's definitely a more aware and awake publication, but Alternet is a large publication, that they published a story like this. Genetically engineered soybeans give altered milk and stunted offspring, researchers find. Now, if you paid attention to anything that Dr. Huber has said, I don't think he ever talked about the soybeans in particular, but he most certainly spoke about the alfalfa and feeding it to livestock. He had mentioned not only finding stuff in the placenta of the growing embryos, but he also was finding it in the offspring of the animals that were ingesting the genetically modified feed. He also had found that there was a greater rate of stillbirth abortions and spontaneous abortions. So there definitely is something going on here that is not being addressed, as we found out listening to the USDA whistleblower yesterday. So anyway, let's read a little bit of this. It says, this result is the strongest demonstration so far of altered growth and development in the offspring of genetically engineered fed mothers. So again, this is from October 29th of 2015. Pregnant goats fed with genetically engineered soybeans have offspring who grow more slowly and are shorter, according to new Italian studies. published in the Journal of Small Ruminant Research, the researchers were testing the results of supplementing the feed of female goats with Roundup Ready genetically engineered soybeans. Roundup Ready soybeans are engineered to resist herbicide Roundup and are sold by agribusiness giant Monsanto. And while they are some of the most widely grown soybeans in the world, and I think we dug into that at one point before, the majority of the soy and the majority of the corn in this country are all genetically modified, and we're talking like upwards of 80 or 90%. The reduced growth of the goat kids was attributed by the researchers to their observations that the milk from the GE-fed mothers was significantly less nutritious and contained less of the IgG, which is the capital I, small g, capital G antibodies important for early growth. And what I find very interesting about this is that anyone who has a child right now, and especially any parent that's awake to genetic modification of food who goes out of their way to make sure they avoid it at any cost possible, you will discover that if you look at your child and you compare them to the other kids in their age group, your child is going to be much larger and much healthier looking, with color, with beef on them, with nice, big, healthy bones, as compared to the majority of the other children with parents who have no clue. And I've noticed this from the early days of preschool. There has been a marked difference. Of course, you go to the doctor, and I'm telling you, there is absolutely nothing wrong with my kid. My kid is way, hell, lot healthier than I was as a child. I was tiny and gangly and small. My kid is a healthy kid. She's a healthy weight. She's big boned. She's got pink, and she looks like a healthy kid. You look at some of these other kids, they're pale. I mean, there are multiple children in my family. She towers over the majority of them. But I mean, just looking at the kids in school, you just would not believe the difference. So I'm going to tell you, I don't, just from my own personal observations, and who would know better than a parent, I could tell you I see a difference. But then digging into the stuff that Dr. Huber has talked about in the reduction of uptake of essential nutrients from the plants, from the soil to the plants, from our gut bacteria to our bodies, from the animals to their offspring, we're discovering over and over again that absolutely glyphosate is one of the big offenders. So anyway, let's get back to the story. And there's one of these dumb ads that moves around again. It says, this was a carefully conducted study, commented Dr. Judy Carman, director of the Institute of Health and Environmental Research from Australia. But she was not involved in the research, but she told the Independent Science news publication that, quote, the differences in the composition of the colostrum, which is something that's in the milk, and here it moves again, oh my God, between the mothers fed the GE soy and the non-GE soy were particularly striking. The colostrum from the GE-fed mothers contains only two-thirds of the fat and only one-third of the protein and only close to half of the IgG of the mothers that were fed non-GM soy. So check this out. As we're spinning genetically modified crops as the solution to cure overpopulation in third world nations and to make sure that all the starving children in Africa get proper nutrition, we have a study, a brand new study right here in front of us that states that in the colostrum of the milk of the mother feeding the infant, in this case it happens to be the goat, the GE-fed mothers contained only two-thirds of the fat in the milk, one-third of the protein, and only half of the antibodies than the mothers who were fed the non-genetically modified products. And to carry out these experiments, the researchers divided pregnant female goats into four groups 60 days before kidding. So I'm assuming kidding is what they call it when the mother goat has the baby goat, or the kid, as they call it. Two of the groups were fed goat food containing GE Roundup Ready soybeans at two different concentrations, and the other two groups were fed conventional non-genetically engineered soybeans, also again at two different concentrations. After the mothers gave birth, all the offspring were fed only with their mother's milk for 60 days. And the growth of these kids was measured twice. After both 30 days and 60 days, the kids of the GE-fed mothers were approximately 20% lower in weight and shorter in stature. And both of these differences were statistically significant. Lower offspring weights were not the only unexpected findings. The researchers also found that the milk of genetically engineered fed goats was lower in protein and fat, and the difference in milk quality was large, 6% of protein in both the GE-fed groups versus 18% protein in both the non-GE-fed groups for the first few weeks after birth, but gradually disappeared, even though the mothers continued to be fed the GE soybeans. So I'm not really sure what that means. Maybe your body gets used to it. I don't know. Additionally, the researchers also found that the colostrum produced by the GE-fed mothers had low amounts of the IgG antibodies, and these antibodies are important for growth and health of immune development. A third difference was noted by researchers, and that was that transgenic DNA, and that is DNA from other organisms that passes, that they put into the genetically engineered food that they are now finding can pass into the organism that consumes it. A third difference was noted by the researchers, and that was that transgenic DNA could be detected in the colostrum of most of the genetically engineered fed goats, and that was in 10 out of 16 of them. No transgene DNA was detected in the milk of the non-GE soybean fed goats. This is not the first time that transgenic DNA has been found in the milk of ruminants, however. Interestingly, the researchers found that all of the kids were of similar size at birth, regardless of whether their mothers ate Roundup Ready GE soybeans or not. The researchers therefore proposed that the stunting of the offspring of GE-fed mothers reflected a milk deficiency. Presumably, either the lower nutritional value of the colostrum in milk of GE-fed mothers or the colostrum antibody difference that was observed. And the authors noted that low IgG antibody levels in the colostrum are correlated with other ruminants with slower growth, and also that the IgG antibodies are known to have a role in nutrient absorption because they help promote the gut development in newborns. Ding, ding, go figure. You know, this IgG, the one time that I've seen that is, and I'll tell you, I've mentioned many times before that I had this 20 to 25 year medical battle on my own where no doctor could help me. And I started coming down with all these autoimmune diseases and illnesses with a collapsed immune system. And I've traced it all the way back to the crazy food that they've been feeding us, starting back with those Flavor Saver tomatoes that we talked about yesterday. And we found proof that they were in the food supply in the early 90s. So I know that's absolutely what it was, that weird tomato allergy that I just happened to get out of the blue, never had issues before. And that was right about when all my problems started. But when I was going to an allergist, and that was where they diagnosed me in the beginning, was with severe allergies to all kinds of stuff, and they would do those blood tests on me, that IgG is something that showed up all the time in my blood work. So it's very interesting that they are now thinking that that IgG antibody is very prominent in the development of proper gut bacteria, because now we know the connections between proper gut bacteria, a functioning immune system, leaky gut syndrome, you know, things in genetically modified organisms like transgenic DNA getting through the small intestine and into the bloodstream. I mean, there's an entire downward spiral that happens once that blood barrier is breached or damaged. Anyway, back to the story. The researchers did not discuss whether the transgene DNA fragments found in the milk played a role in altering kid development. But this result is the strongest demonstration so far of altered growth and development in offspring of GE-fed mothers. This same research in 2010 showed altered activity of the lactic dehydrogenase, let's try that again, dehydrogenase enzyme in kids fed milk from mothers that ate GE Roundup Ready soybeans. And in that previous study, however, no additional effects on goat offspring were detected. Well, interesting, because that was 5 years ago. I'm sure that they've probably changed the formulation by now. Who knows? All I'm saying is that this stuff is going into our food supply. There are lots of scientists now, and ones with some pretty significant backgrounds like Dr. Huber, who are raising the red flag to back up the truck. And this whole new precision medicine initiative, 21st Century Healthy People Act of 2020, I think that's what they were calling it, 21st Century Cures Act, all of this great synthetic biology integrated into our world is being done without any forethought or real testing to see what the long-term ramifications will be. All right, so that was pretty much the end of that story. But hey, it gets even better. There is a story here about our cheese. Oh, please don't go for the cheese. Well, they might be. This is a story out of April of 2015. Cow milk without the cow is coming to change food forever. And what caught my attention about this story was cow milk without the cow. Because cows are one of the animals that they are pointing to, and they have been for a while, but I think that we're going to start seeing now with 3D printed insect protein nutraceuticals that the drumbeats are going to be getting louder to get rid of cows. Cows produce a lot of methane. They're number one on the list. And we just had the UN come out and talk about how red meat and processed meats cause cancer. You cannot tax the system. And eating red meat will make you a potential future cancer case. So we're going to take all the red meat away and we'll give you what's healthy for you. So cow milk without the cow is coming to change food forever. Counterculture Labs takes its name pretty literally. It is a bio lab for sure, complete with pipettes, carboys, microscopes, and flasks, but it is decidedly counter to the traditional culture of laboratory science. The DIY tinkerers who hang out here in the back of a sprawling space that used to house a heavy metal club in Oakland, California, are working beyond conventional notions of inquiry and research, and their goal is nothing less than to hack nature. And we've talked about that many times. That's pretty much what it is. It's hacking and cracking the genome and becoming the Isle of Dr. Moreau. They're calling them biohackers, and I've seen a bunch of stories now. Might be an interesting Google search to read up what biohackers are doing. I saw a news story yesterday about biohackers cutting their hands and inserting LED lights into themselves. I don't know. It seemed pretty strange. But whatever. You know, if you're that into becoming part of the machine, why don't you send Kurzweil an email? I'm sure that he could have some use for you in a lab somewhere in a dark, scary corner. They got a brain implant on live TV just for you. Consider one group of biohackers who meet in the lab each Monday night to work on a project that sounds like a contradiction in terms. They are trying to make cow's milk cheese without the cow using mail order DNA. And yes, back about a year ago, I was out on some of these mad science publication sites reading deep into some whatever I was researching at the time. And I actually had Google Ads popping up on the side of the page for mail order DNA. And I remember thinking to myself, what has this world come to? Like, for $150, and I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't think, who knows what it is now. But for $150, I could buy myself a vial of DNA to do something with. And it's a pretty frightening thought. And it really makes you kind of wonder, too, with the lack of ethics that are going on, like, what is the sanctity of life now? If you can literally buy the building blocks of life from an ad, from a Google ad, flashing on the side of your page, what does this world come to? So apparently in a lab, in the back of an old heavy metal club in Oakland, California, they're buying mail order DNA and doing what's called biohacking. So using mail order DNA, they're cheese hackers. They are tricking yeast cells into producing a substance that's molecularly identical to milk. Seems to be like one of the things that is working very well in this entire field is tricking yeast into developing things. I've seen yeast in quite a number of stories now for all kinds of different things and turning the yeast into a production factory. If this is successful, they will then turn this milk into cheese. And that is real cheese, but it's vegan cheese. Real vegan cheese. Yay! Without the cow. Leave it to the lefties. That's the name of this project. It's real vegan cheese. And what a nice spin on that. Doesn't say GMO anywhere, right? You're going to get all these vegans on the East Coast who think they're doing the planet good, eating vegan cheese without the cow. And what they're doing in the meantime, first of all, who the hell knows what the long-term results are of eating? I mean, who even knows where this mail order DNA yeast came from? Or I don't know. This just isn't right to me. You're creating things out of things that they weren't meant to create. Says these hackers, you're hacking nature. These hackers want cheese that tastes like the real thing, but they don't want it to come from an animal. Now, I don't know about you. I mean, I definitely have issues when I start thinking about slaughterhouses and just how horrible factory farming is. Absolutely, that bothers me. But on the other hand, when I'm thinking about cheese, I mean, they have milkers and stuff, but I don't think, you know, cheese is something that I would put on the top of my list for animal cruelty. Cows like to produce cheese. We had a dairy farm here just up the street until a few years ago, and those cows looked like pretty happy cows to me. I'm all for cheese as long as it's not radioactive. Anyway, but they don't want it coming from the animal. Abandoning real cheese is one of the hardest sacrifices vegans must make, says one member of the group, Benjamin Rupert, a chemist by training and a vegan for the past decade. And with real vegan cheese, they won't have to. What we're making is identical to the animal protein. But you are not giving anything up, really. It says, this may sound strange, silly, and even more than a little far-fetched, but it is real. We have reached the point where hacking DNA is neither technically difficult, ding, ding, nor terribly expensive. Now, regardless if we're talking about vegan cheese or if we're talking about fish genes and tomatoes, or hackers, biohackers, hacking DNA in their garage. This has reached the point of absurdity. If it is no longer expensive and it is no longer difficult, how long is it going to be? I mean, remember, we have hackers and crackers and ISIS under every bed and in every closet right now. It's gotten a little quiet, but don't think that they're not hiding in there because they are. What's going to happen when one of these bad people, quote unquote, bad people, the ones who have been dubbed bad, what's going to happen when one of these biohackers, right? They had to add the name hacker in there. gets their hands on something that isn't as innocuous as cheese curd, then we're going to have a real big problem. What's going to happen when all of a sudden we have an outbreak of, oh, I don't know, Ebola or Johnny's measles, except that it's been spliced and diced? I mean, how many times did we go over the stories that were from like 2011? I think we ran into them, maybe 2012, in three different scientific publications, which caught my attention, about how could you possibly, hypothetically speaking, of course, engineer rabies so it would be easily transmissible. And I think the grand prize was given to National Geographic or Discover Magazine, I think it was National Geographic, that had talked about combining the rabies virus with the common cold and then aerosolizing it. And they were like, wow, how amazing would that be? Because the common cold is so easily transmissible between humans, and rabies causes the loss of the part of our brain that gives us impulse control. And as you start to go completely insane and your brain gets eaten whole and you lose your impulse control, you could turn into a bloodlusting zombie. That's what it was. They wanted to know how to easily create the zombie virus. And it had been postulated that combining the common cold with rabies and then aerosolizing it over a city would be a great solution. Now, thank you very much for Discover Magazine and National Geographic and maybe even Scientific American. I don't remember what all three of them were, but they were three publications that I greatly respected at the time. Thank you very much for coming up with those wonderful solutions. And now with DNA splicing and dicing being cheap and easy, hey, that might even be possible in somebody's garage. I mean, what's the insanity of this? Be careful what you search for on the internet. That might make you a cracker hacker to just be searching for mail order DNA. Anyway, sequencing the human genome used to cost billions of dollars, but now it just costs a few thousand. And at the same time, we've talked about Moore's Law. The Moore's Law type effect has dramatically cut the cost of writing genes, ordering snippets of custom DNA with letter-by-letter precision is as simple as filling out an online form, and it costs less than 25 cents per basis pair. A price that puts the genes for making quasi-cow's milk within the reach of a hobbyist. However odd this project may seem, it shows what soon will be possible with homegrown food science. So is this going to be like the new homebrew? I don't know. We're approaching a world where the divide between the quote-unquote natural and the quote-unquote artificial collapses, where amateurs in their kitchen can fiddle with life to make edible substances that are both artisanal and the most radically processed foods ever made. Now that I don't even have a statement for. And I know, yeah, it is odd, but it's not odd. This is the world that we are going to leave for our children. Counterculture Labs, in keeping with its DIY spirit, is itself a work in progress, a space for tinkering that constantly is being tinkered with. When I visited late last year, one half-built lab bench included a pig's heart floating in a glass jar. It was pale white, but for a metal pipe jutting out from the top, the heart was chemically stripped of all but its cartilage. And if this were a movie, a ghost heart would be an ominous sign that here was a place where science had gone awry and where nature is being perverted. Well, I think that would probably be my assessment. But the vibe at Counterculture Labs is more science fair than mad scientist. Oh my God. We're turning our children into mad scientists. This heart, belongs to Patrick D. Hessler, a Harvard-trained computational biologist who leads the research group at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. Oh, so we have Lawrence Livermore, an employee there from Harvard, who's involved with this biohacker group. That figures. He said that the ghost heart could be used as a scaffold, and we talked about this, using 3D printed stem cells, could be used as a scaffold on which living tissue could be grown to create a transplantable organ from a patient's own stem cells. And Counterculture Labs, he says, lets them explore such things in a hands-on way that is not possible with his day job. So, yeah, there's no regulations in your own biolab. Oh, my God. See, now I would think that anyone who is doing this on their own, I mean, little Johnny who's surfing around quietly on the web, buying his own life that he created at 25 cents a DNA pair, should probably be on some sort of red list, would you not think? Anyway, back to this Patrick D. Hessler, Harvard-trained computational biologist who leads a research group at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, but is also a biohacker by night, says his attitudes exemplifies what's called in the DIY biotech movement, which has emerged in the past decade. The movement's goal, as Counterculture Labs' website succinctly notes, is to, quote, excite curiosity and empower exploration. We offer a comfy, open space in which to learn, create, tinker, and innovate. Open to scientists, biohackers, and empiricists of all stripes, unquote. The movement of self-consciously compares itself to homebrew's digital pioneers of the 1970s who wrestled digital technology out of academia and business into the wider realm of the amateurs. And it's open to anyone with an idea. An idea like real vegan cheese. Yes, under the guise of real vegan cheese. We have a mad science lab open to anyone who wants to biohack. The guy who's writing the story says, when I visited the lab, I discovered the cheese team included a biologist, a bioethicist, a retired clinical psychologist, surprise, an accountant, and a former Apple marketer. This to me is a natural extension of the computer culture. See, guys, all this is growing out of the tech movement. I think that's what's most disturbing to me. Everything that we helped create and launch out of this world that has become the internet and e-commerce and soon to become transhumanism created all of this insanity that we have now. This genie needs to be taken out. We need some anti-genie medication to put these genies, this evil that has been unleashed, creating whatever life. I mean, it literally has put insanity in the hands of people who, yes, say that they're doing good for the world, but anybody who would aspire to become a god and manipulate life in ways it was never meant to be manipulated and then unleash it upon the world really needs to have some sort of screw loose, especially if you're doing it in the name of profit without any understanding of the implications to future generations. Sure, real vegan cheese might sound like a great idea now, but what happens when they sell out or somebody gets their hands on the recipe and they start manufacturing real vegan cheese with all kinds of other nutraceuticals in it? Other nutraceuticals that do things such as flip off, reproduction. or tinker with your immune system, making you, you know, putting, they already did it with goat's milk in Africa, with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, with the malaria vaccine in the goat milk, and giving it to poor, unsuspecting villagers. Anyway, back to the story. This, to me, is a natural extension of computer culture, says Maria Chavez, an ex-Apple employee and a leader of the Vegan Cheese Project. What is bigger to hack than our bodies and our environment? It is one of the last big frontiers, and the possibilities are exciting, she says. The possibilities include not just vegan cow cheese, but, well, hey, vegan human cheese as well. Here we go, people. We got another story about, oh, God, way back when they already in China had genetically engineered over 300 cows with human breast milk genes so they would produce human breast milk as opposed to cow's milk because, hey, it's good for you. Oh, but she says, yes, it's not just vegan cheese, non-vegan, non-cow cheese, but it's also vegan human cheese in the future. The same basic process for synthesizing cow's milk applies to milk from any other mammal. You just need the different genes. Cheese made from engineered human breast milk may not sound like a top seller at the deli counter, but the team said that it can serve a practical purpose. Human milk cheese could offer an option to people who have allergies. Oh, right. Allergies to non-human dairy products. Chavez says the group has put its experiments with human milk on hold to Food and Drug Administration concerns about possible autoimmune reactions. Yeah. And you know what? All they got to do is sell their research to the Chinese company that was already experimenting on cows. They also hope to engineer cheese based on the milk of the narwhal, the most outlandish mammal that they could imagine. They hear that the milk, oh my God, if you're eating your breakfast, put it down. They hear that the milk has the consistency of toothpaste. Continuing. The DIY biotech movement sprang out of and alongside an MIT-sponsored competition called iGEM, or International Genetically Engineered Machine. And yes, good old MIT. We've talked about them many times. It's where the father of nanotechnology came from. First held in 2004, iGEM is a kind of science fair where MIT students use a set of open source genetic quote-unquote parts to create new kinds of microorganisms. Yes, let's have a competition at MIT to create life as a project. And initially, the competition was only for undergraduates. But after graduation, many competitors were interested in continuing this kind of work beyond academia's traditional constraints. And as they did, the competition opened its doors wider. Real vegan cheese, or at least the concept, won the best prize for the community lab project of 2014, the first year DIYers could compete alongside the students. Why cheese? Well, it resonates in multiple ways with these indie scientists as a process going back centuries. All hail the cheesemakers. Yes, cheese making reflects the artisanal ethic that they like to cultivate. And at the same time, cheese is one of the earliest examples of humans manipulating microbes to transform one substance into another. It was a kind of proto-biotechnology. And what's more, some DIYers happen to be vegan. And they miss cheese. And yes, there are vegan cheeses made from plants. But to put it kindly, they fall short. They are mimicking protein structures that just don't exist in the plant kingdom, and they don't have the same taste or texture. And I mean, if we go back to and we look at the test tube beef and being able to coax beef stem cells into muscle cells and then exercise them in petri dishes to make non-beef beef, and you could see where this is all headed. This just, I am a foodophobe, and this is not cutting the cheese with me at all. Says, but they aren't just trying to feed themselves. These DIYers view prizes open innovation and the idea that knowledge and skills should be available to anyone to play with. Real Vegan is making its cheese recipe open source. Real Vegan cheese is also with traditional cheese. DIYers want anyone to be able to make this biotech version at home. You know, I don't know. I just don't even know what to say about this. As it stands, the Real Vegan Cheese team has identified 11 proteins that will form the foundations of their cheese. And the next step is to take custom fabricated snippets of DNA, genetic material that carries the instructions for synthesizing milk's protein, and insert them into a plain old baker's yeast. Then they put the yeast into a bioreactor, which is a fancy term for a fermenter, and there they soak it in a broth of nutrients and sugar. Oh, God. It's technology that humans have used for centuries to make beer, feed carbohydrates to yeast, which in turn excretes alcohol. Only these modified yeast don't excrete alcohol. They excrete milk. You know, I had just read something not too long ago that they also had found a way to make synthetic opium doing something very similar to this, where they were using, I believe it was yeast, and they were putting it into a fermenter, and it was producing opium, which, of course, they wouldn't want that to get out because it would damage all their profits out of Afghanistan. But, hey, police already had their eye on that as a potential to hit the streets as a cheap opium. Anyway, it says, at least this is the theory so far. So far, the group has managed to splice 10 of the 11 DNA snippets into the yeast, and they now are testing to confirm that their hacked microbes are producing milk proteins. Even when they do, other problems will remain. Though the proteins provide a foundation, the group will still need to find vegan substitutes for the naturally occurring animal fat and milk sugar of lactose that are the other essential ingredients in the cheese. And this is where the Real Vegan Cheese goes from biotech to food science. Will palm oil give Real Vegan Cheese the bulk to make it indistinguishable from non-vegan varieties, maybe cocoa butter? These questions aren't trivial. After all, chemically identical doesn't mean much if in the end product doesn't taste good. And remember, the reason why they said, quote unquote, chemically identical, and this is something that we touched upon yesterday, but we've talked about before when we dug into the FDA and the USDA about approval for GMOs on the market. The reason why an apple is an apple and a potato is a potato is because their requirements for introducing these aren't doing 20-year studies or 20 generational studies, let's say, because they'd be doing them on animals to see what types of genetic mutations are absorbed and passed down to offspring. No, what they do is they have you look at the genetic makeup of the product. And as long as it is, what did they call it? Chemically identical. So whether it's a naturally occurring or an engineered chemical, synthetic chemical, as long as it's chemically identical by their definition, it should be the same, right? It's just how they do it too with generic drugs. We've talked about that before as opposed to the patented drugs. So after all, chemically identical does not mean much if the end product doesn't taste good. And even then, if the project succeeds, this will this be real milk or real cheese, the answers may be hard to come by because scientists are still trying to understand the milk and the cheese we eat today. Rafael Jimenez Flores loves milk. A professor at Cal Poly's Dairy Products Technology Center, he describes milk as a weird and marvelous substance uniquely evolved to nourish. But he explains, milk nourishes more than babies. Mothers expend a lot of metabolic energy to synthesize sugars in their milk that babies don't digest. And from an evolutionary standpoint, that sounds wasteful. But recent research suggests that these undigested sugars feed beneficial bacteria in the baby's gut. Researchers are still working to understand the functions of these bacteria. Jimenez Flores says that this complexity cannot be artificially replicated since scientists themselves still don't fully understand how milk works. Uncertain ethics, but just because this is possible, some critics believe that does not mean we should do it. And I'm going to agree with this. I don't think we should be doing a lot of this insanity that we're doing right now, because this is just opening the door to further insanity. And maybe vegan milk won't be the straw that breaks the camel's back in regards to some sort of cascading catastrophe at a genetic level that we've created, but by allowing this to continue unwatched, untethered, anything goes, any lunatic can buy mail order DNA and create some crazy shit in his lab, you're just asking for trouble. This is like giving everybody the ingredients to make a nuclear warhead in their garage and saying, have fun. I mean, I just can't even get over how scientists globally are thinking that this is a good thing. This is putting the power of gods into the hands of idiots. And we've done this so many times before. Somehow we all happen to still be here. We don't know how many close calls we've had. But it literally is the power of gods in the hands of idiots. Or narcissists. Or lunatics. Anybody. Anyway, just because we can doesn't mean we should do it. And many vegans in particularly frown on genetically modified organisms, and biotech critics question the safety of fiddling with nature's alphabet. Well, bravo. The issues become especially troubling for some when that science is being done in an unmonitored DIY lab beyond the bounds of traditional, more tightly controlled institutions. Hello. I mean, this is anyone with half a brain would be raising these very questions. At least I know I must have half a brain here. The creators of real vegan cheese say the GMO debate does not apply to their creation because the end product, the cheese itself, will not contain any genetically modified material. And this is exactly how we've read a couple stories now over the last week, how these new quote-unquote GMO foods are getting through any of the regulatory agencies because in the end result, they're not technically genetically modified. They're using bacteria to create something that then will go in and make changes, or they use CRISPR technology within this bacteria to change DNA that then reproduces something else as its engine. That can be considered a product, not a genetically modified organism. They modified the organism that went into the process, but not the end result. And this is just going to get hairier by the day. It says, yes, the yeast which produces the milk has been hacked, but the actual product isn't so different from the food made using centuries-old techniques. Beer, yogurt, cheese itself, all depending upon processing organic matter through bacteria. The assurances doesn't comfort Dana Pearls of the environmental group Friends of the Earth, and I believe Friends of the Earth was one of the organizations called out in that story we kicked off the show with 2 days ago that mentioned Food Babe and Greenpeace as well as some of the people that are out there making a bad name for GMOs. Anyway, this Dana Perls of Friends of the Earth is a vocal critic of synthetic biology, which is the catch-all name given to biotech based on writing custom genes and synthetic biology's potential uses in food making in particular. We need regulations specific to these new technologies, and we need safety assessments, she says. And that's what I say. And I mean, I'm no prude man, and I am no anti-science guru. I love this stuff, but I'm telling you what, I don't love this stuff when this is now something that is coming without testing and is going to get into our food supply. We already know they've been doing the slick willy for 25 years, slipping this stuff in and not telling anybody without any long-term testing. And it potentially could affect my child more than anything. Not even just me, my child. That's where I'm drawing the line here. When it comes to synthetic biology, Perls advocates the so-called precautionary principle, I do as well, which would require scientists to prove that a given technique or product is safe before allowing it to go ahead. And what's even more disturbing is this is the same lunacy that is now being applied to by the biotechnology that is happening in our medical advancements, 21st Century Cures Act. Let's get rid of having to prove it's safe before we get it to the marketplace. I mean, it's identical. And guess what? It's the same insane technologies they're using in the medical field as in the food field. Not surprisingly, Perls finds that the spread of DIY labs, particularly alarming, traditional labs are hard enough to monitor. And yes, how many stories have we heard about the CDC and the DOD labs shipping out, oh, I don't know, bazillions of samples of anthrax that, whoops, we accidentally didn't kill them by the process we thought used to kill them. Oh, no, all over the globe, but don't worry about it. Traditional labs are hard enough to monitor, even level 4 bio labs, I guess. And can we be reprogramming life in our garages and be sure that nothing goes wrong, she says. Well, good question. For Perls and other biotech critics, the biggest fear is that an organism built in the lab will escape into the wild and decimate vulnerable ecosystems. And unlike, let's say, an oil spill, a synthetic microbe in this worst-case scenario couldn't be cleaned up because it would keep producing. Can you say, Cynthia? I mean, honestly, I've read so many things about some sort of synthetic microbe being utilized in the Gulf, and we saw a reference to it yesterday in a story. I have not seen any real details of someone finding it in the water, but if someone lives along the Gulf and would like to get some testing done to see what kind of bacteria is in there, that would probably be some pretty groundbreaking research to prove once and for all if they did some sort of mad science gone mad test in that Gulf of Mexico. Anyway, the Real Vegan Cheese team says it's sensitive to all these concerns. Yes, don't worry about it. And though they say, like most synthetic biologists, that is the biggest challenge isn't locking down their creations. It is ensuring that they survive at all. Real Vegan Cheese isn't alone in trying to apply synthetic biology to food production. Indeed, for-profit ventures are hotly pursuing these possibilities. A San Francisco startup called Mufri, M-U-U-F-R-I, pronounced Moo-free, recently announced that it received $2 million to develop its own cowless cow milk. And in Switzerland, a company called Evolva is using synthetic biology to make flavors traditionally derived from hard-to-find plants such as vanilla and saffron. And I think they were mentioned yesterday or another company that was working on the synthetic vanilla. And right now, we discussed this last week, one of the natural, quote unquote, vanilla food additives is actually coming from beaver anal glands. So I don't know what's worse, beaver anal glands or synthetically produced vanillin. Unlike typical artificial vanillin, so I guess the real artificial vanillin is made from wood pulp or petrochemicals, says Evolva's CEO. His company's vanillin is chemically identical to the flavorable substance extracted from the vanilla bean, but costs much, much less. Really, what we are doing is simply taking genes that already exist in the plant and putting them in something that already exists in the food chain, referring to the yeast cells that Evolva is hacking to make its vanillin. That's really not a big deal, he says. But is human manipulation of DNA unnatural? To answer such a question, you have to ask whether the technology itself is natural. Humans have been consciously intervening in the natural environment and screwing it up since the first stone hammers were hoisted, and we started altering the evolution of other species the first time we planted seeds in the ground. And most of the food we eat comes from humans manipulating nature to make it work for us. Well, that is true, but I think this is what I'm saying. I think this takes it to the next level of insanity. Still, plunging into the core of what makes life work forces us to re-examine assumptions about nature so ingrained that the English language hardly has the capacity to articulate them. And that is true. Makes me speechless quite often. Is cow's milk without the cow really cow's milk? And if not, what do we call it? And is it a distinction without a difference? Or does meddling in life's alphabet, how interesting, that's Google's new umbrella name, make all the difference? Well, I'm going to leave that for some food for thought today. I don't know. I don't remember now when my bumper comes in. Maybe we got another second or two. Here's one more. If you didn't believe that it was insanity, a former McDonald's CEO is now joining a vegan meat startup. Oh, yes. Let's get McDonald's in the game. All right, guys. Everybody have an awesome Wednesday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. Stick around tonight for lots of live radio, and I'll catch up. Oh.